of Lake Effect Now, I'm Mitch Tyke. Laura and Lydia Rogers consider themselves pretty lucky. They come from a musical family in a community that values music a great deal. But not everyone in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, has both their talent for creating magical harmonies and the fortuitous timing that landed them a record deal. And it's not just any record deal. The two who perform as the Secret Sisters attracted the ear of producer Dave Cobb and then the attention of the legendary T-Bone Burnett. Burnett created a new record label especially to release the sisters' self-titled CD. The album features standards from the Americana songbook and some originals, which someday could become standards on their own. It was produced using vintage recording equipment, and even when you play the CD, you can almost hear the needle touching down on vinyl in songs like this one, the Hank Williams song, House of Gold. The Secret Sisters were in Milwaukee recently, opening for Amos Lee, and they stopped by the Lake Effect studio. Laura and Lydia Rogers, welcome to Lake Effect.
It's nice to be here. Thanks
Glad
for having us.
Can you paint a picture of music for you growing up in Muscle Shoals, Alabama?
Sure. We actually grew up in a church that didn't use any musical instruments, and so that was kind of the basis of what we grew up on. We had to learn how to harmonize with each other and read shape notes and things like that. So that's a lot of where our sound comes from. And also, our dad is in a bluegrass band, and so we grew up going to all kinds of festivals, and our mom can sing really well. And so music has just always been a staple in our lives.
Yeah, it's always been around. I remember, having a record player going all the time. I knew how to work a record player when I was three, And it was just always, it was our favorite pastime, and I think our parents really introduced us to the kind of music that we draw all of our inspiration from. They're really the key component of that.
Well, and so you say you grew up in this church with no musical instruments. You weren't just harmonizing with each other. You were harmonizing with...
With the entire congregation, yes.
Yeah.
The point of it was to, not overpower anybody beside you. You're singing as a group, as a whole. And so, we don't try to overpower each other. That's
right.
That's
and when you've been doing that for, 20-something years, it really does get to a point where it just comes naturally. And I think some singers that we talk to just talk about, I can't imagine being able to hear these harmonies that you hear just so naturally, but we can't imagine not being able to. It's just kind of ingrained.
Yeah.
Well, and it couldn't hurt that you're sisters. So
That's true.
That adds a bit, yes.
Yeah.
We didn't really sing a lot together growing up that I remember, but we had these family we still have these family reunions every year, and everybody brings instruments and we take turns singing songs together, and we always have known that we could sing together, but we never made a point to pursue it.
Yeah, it wasn't
professionally.
A big deal. That's the thing to us. I think music is everything to us, but what we do and what we love, it's not a big deal because it's just so second nature, and to us, even to this day, we played here last night and I still, I was looking at all these people waiting in line to buy our record and wanting to talk to us, and I thought, why do these people like it? So I still can't understand it. I'm obviously thrilled that the response is positive, but it's really interesting
because where we come from, it feels like everybody can do what we do. There are probably 50 other people in our home congregation that can do this. So it's just strange that people are so drawn to it.
Give us a thumbnail sketch of your discovery. How do you go from singing at home or in church or at family gatherings to not only meeting but working with people like Dave Cobb and T-Bone Ooh. Burnett and the others who you've had a chance to work with?
It's been really quick, actually. It doesn't happen like this for most musicians. But there was actually an open audition in Nashville back in October of 2009. And anybody who wanted to could come and try out. And Laura decided to go to get over some stage fright issues that she had. She didn't think anything would come from it. So she went just on a whim, and they wound up really liking her voice. And she told them she had a younger sister, thankfully. And I drove up from my ceramics class in Alabama, and I tried out on my own. And they liked what I had to offer. And then we sang together, and the rest is history. We had a record deal within 2 months. Is that right?
About 2 months at the audition.
And then we recorded the record a month later.
With Dave Cobb.
Yes.
A month later. And mm-hmm. then a few months after that, T-Bone heard the music and loved it and said, I want to, you know, put my touch on it and really, you know, put it out there with my stamp on it. And so, you know, you can't ask for a better blessing. But it's just been really... I think if either of us had known that this would turn into a record deal when we walked into that audition, I don't know if I would have gone because I literally was terrified to sing in front of people. But I've had to get over that really quickly, and it's turned out to be a really pleasing experience for me. So,
how hard was it for you to have done it that first time?
It was terrifying. I remember I got there so early because I thought if I don't get there early, I will have a panic attack. And I got there, and there were about 20 people who auditioned before me. And I'm sitting in the lobby of this hotel looking at all these people who are so put together and so good. And I almost walked away about 15 times. But then they called my name, and there was no turning back. And I went in, and I sang, and I thought, well, you know, good job. It wasn't that impressive, but you were brave. And I went home, and then I got the phone call that they loved it. And I thought, what is happening?
There are a couple of Rogers originals on this album.
Yes.
The song that hooked me right out of the gate was Tennessee Me. Can you talk about writing a song in the 21st century that sounds so authentically like it could easily be part of the mid-20th century songbook?
That's a really huge compliment. Actually, you know, I wrote the lyrics of that song it's been probably 4 years now that I wrote that song, and I thought it was just one of those throwaway songs. I never would have envisioned it becoming what it has. And, you know, I just kind of kept it back with all my other original material. And then whenever it came time to make the record, Dave Cobb said, you know, I want to hear your original material, whether it's good or bad. And so we let him hear that song, and he loved it. And so we worked on it some more and kind of, you know, reshaped it a little bit. And Lydia really came in and helped with the harmony and with the bridge that we added. Kind of intimidating to know that our original material was going to have to measure up next to the likes of George Jones or Hank Williams or Buck Owens or any of those people. You know, that's intimidating. But I think we were both pleasantly surprised at how well it fit in there. And to have people say, you know, it holds up next to everybody else, then that's a huge,
it's encouraging,
huge compliment.
For sure.
Well, and I don't know that the music ever completely went out of fashion, but much of it is of another time.
Right.
Why do you think it resonates so well with people today?
I think people are they're starving for that kind of music. You know, they're so used to auto-tuning and, you know, overproduction, and I think now they just want simplicity.
And authenticity, I think,
absolutely.
Too. And it's not even just about... I mean, I think the genre of music that we play is also something that has to do with it. But I think in a general sense, people are just really hungry for real talent and people who can sound as good live as they do on their record. And, you know, that's a lot of the reason why we recorded the record the way that we did and why it's so important to us to present our truest form of ourselves to people.
You recorded the whole album on, I don't know, period-appropriate equipment.
Yes.
Right.
Why was that such an important part of the process?
That was important to us because we knew what sound we wanted in the end, but we really didn't know how to get there. And when you need that, you call in people like Dave or T-Bone, and they mm-hmm. know how to get you to your destination. But, you know, when we started talking about the record, we did feel like it was very important to just be true to that era of music in every sense, whether it be the way that we dress, the way that we talk, the way that we present ourselves, the way we record, the way we write. We really want to just showcase that era of music and we're mm-hmm. proud of that era because I think it's where we've all come from. And
it was fun to do it that way.
Yeah, it's just something magical.
We were all in one room and we sang into one mic, Laura and I, and it was just fun to, you know, go back in time.
Right. There is a certain irony, though, that you went through all these lengths to do that, and now you can download it on iTunes.
That's
yeah,
true.
How lucky is that? We do have it on vinyl, though, for what it's worth. Yeah.
Do you feel like you're at all walking a tricky line? You're going to have fans that remember these songs, remember having them on 45s or 33s or, right. or God help us, 78s, or dancing to them or whatever. But they're older. It's a strange question, but is there something modern that goes into the equation in terms of reaching people that don't necessarily have the memory of their parents and their grandparents' scratchy old records?
I think yeah, there is a fine line that I think you have to walk. But I think that both of us just, we believe in the music so much that we believe that the music will reach the right people at the right time for the right reasons. And I think that, you know, we really wanted the record to feel, you know, like a tribute to this era of music, but also very youthful and fun and energetic. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to put a modern kind of, you know, twist on it because we are young girls who live in 2011, you know.
Right.
But I think that it's doing what it needs to do on its own. I really do.
But it seems like the way this would all go wrong is if people simply thought of you as a nostalgia act.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't want people to think that. We, you know, like Laura said, we live in 2011 and we listen to a lot of music from today, and we don't, you know, we don't always just prance around in 1950s dresses. You know, it's, you know, we're young girls and we don't want people to think that we just, you know, live in that time.
But we also want people to realize that we do embody a certain respect and value for I think, you know, the music that a lot of people forget about. I think that, you know, especially in country music, it's easy to forget who your ancestors are, you know, and we want to represent that and we want to, you know, remind people of it, even if it's just for one record cycle, two record cycles,
yeah.
whatever, you know, if we can do anything to just say, hey, remember this and wasn't it good?
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you.
I wonder, does it feel like one thing to sing a Hank Williams or a Buck Owens or a Frank Sinatra song when you're with family or friends, but does it give you pause when you're about to sit down and record it and attach your name to this tradition?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, you know, I think when we recorded the record, and it's going to be interesting to record the second record because things have, you know, things are so different and we're different people than we were then. But when we went in, you know, we went in before T-Bone came around, before Jack White mm-hmm. came around, before any of this, you know, big kind of ordeal happened. We just wanted to record a great record. And, you know, the songs really resonated with us because they're just part of the fabric of who we are. And so being able to record a Hank Williams song, I mean, yeah, it is. There's a little bit of intimidation there. Or, you know, Frank Sinatra, that's really intimidating. But I don't know. I think for us it was all about, let's just record a fun record. And if people get it, wonderful. And if they don't, well, we had fun, you know. And luckily everybody's getting it, I think.
You just recently came back from a tour of Europe.
Yes.
Was the reception any different for you there?
It was huge.
It was a lot bigger there. It was kind of overwhelming, actually. We would go out to the merch table after we performed, and it would just be a sea of people waiting to talk to us. And it was just so humbling, you know. It's crazy how Europe responds. They seem to really jump onto the bandwagon before America does, usually.
Right. We're actually headed back over there in May to do our first headlining tour. Yeah. So
it's exciting.
There's a song on the album that I think is a traditional English or Irish folk song.
Yes.
How did that song find its way into your repertoire?
That song was... It's one we've been doing for a while, actually.
Yeah, we actually heard Rufus Wainwright and his sister do a version of the song, and I think it's a really, really old song. I mean, I don't even know how old, but we heard him and his sister do it, and so we decided, and we actually performed that together during the audition in 2009, and it's cool how it actually made it onto the record.
Do you love an apple?
You have an Australia tour coming
yes.
up, and you're on a bill with Elvis Costello and then Bob Dylan.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy. We've been so lucky. It's insane that we'll be – actually, Elvis called Laura yesterday, and it's just so strange that, you know, to talk on the phone with him. You know, it's just – we're so, so fortunate.
He's been
a great
help with us and our career. He's been just a champion. And I think he really is responsible for starting a buzz for us overseas in Europe.
Yeah.
You know, he really has said a lot of good things about us. And so we're excited to hopefully get to Australia and make some fans, and – I hope I see a kangaroo in the wild, personally. You know, I would love that.
It's more likely there than in Milwaukee, anyway.
Yeah, well,
true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Do you worry that this is all happening too fast, that it's almost difficult to process, that it's, I mean, you know, you went from Muscle Shoals to this in,
yeah.
what, 2 years?
Yeah.
It is scary. I mean, we were pushed into this business so quickly that we're having to learn really fast. You know, we're having to learn how to perform and, you know, do interviews and things like that. But, you know, we're lucky. And
I'm very honest about this, but being a performing musician is really tough sometimes. I mean, it demands a lot of you, and you may only work, quote unquote, for 30 minutes a day, 45 minutes a day, but getting to that point is a lot, you know, and it takes a lot to get the word out and to break an artist. I've been surprised at how much work and time it takes, but, you know, I mean, when you get on that stage, it's good.
It makes it worth it, for sure.
It's really good. But I do worry that, you know, it's going so fast and we feel like we can't say no to anything because everything is so good, you know, everything's a good opportunity. And it's just trying to find a balance of, yeah, you know, we're doing what we need to do, but we also are able to be people from time to time.
So the last question I have for you is, are those actually vintage 50s outfits or?
Some of them aren't. We have some people who pick out dresses for us sometimes, and then sometimes we find some on our own. But, yeah, we have a lot of old ones. They fall apart pretty easily.
The road wears out the dresses, I'm telling you. And they're awful cold in snowy Milwaukee weather. But
Well, it was certainly nice of you to don the attire for an early morning interview.
No
and
problem.
No worries.
It's good to be
here.
We're
pros at it by now, you know. Just wake up looking like a secret sister.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much. It was a delight to talk with you, and I hope we'll see you back in Milwaukee, and maybe you can play for us in the studio sometime.
We would love to.
Yes.
Thanks
That'd be
for
great.
Having us.
I don't know how to love you like you want me to, but I'm sure that I could learn if you let me. Somehow we're not the same. You keep on playing games, and I'm tired of wasting time while you make up your mind. Waste the day, waste the night. I want you.
Laura and Lydia Rogers are the Secret Sisters. They're from Muscle Shoals, Alabama, but they were in Milwaukee recently, opening for Amos Lee at the Riverside Theater. The song we're hearing is an original song called Waste the Day from their self-titled album. There's more of our interview, plus a link to the video of their other original, Tennessee Me, at wuwm.com/Lake Effect. The Secret Sisters take us out on this Monday edition of Lake Effect. Tomorrow on the show, a behind-the-scenes account of the effort to stop the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, which started a year ago Wednesday. I'm Mitch Tighe. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I hope you can be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from WUWM and WUWM HD1, Milwaukee Public Radio. Fresh Air is next. I want you to be all right when I'm gone. I hope your bed's still warm and that you find another charming girl to hold you tight. Ways the day, ways